Good morning. My name is Brandy, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the ERP, SCM, and CRM webinar conference call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question-and-answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, please press the pound key. Thank you. Mr. Davison, you may begin your conference.
Thank you very much, and good morning and good afternoon, everybody. My name is Neil Davison from Gartner, and on behalf of Gartner and indeed Managing Vice President Jim Holinchek, I'd like to welcome you to our webinar on ERP, SCM, and CRM selection. And Jim is going to look at discontinuities in sourcing for software as a service and on-premises. So I'll make a few opening comments and then hand the call over to Jim. Just as a reminder, this session is being held by a live meeting, and there's a URL link embedded in the confirmation email that you received. Please click on that now if you've not done so already. This way, you'll be able to follow along with the analyst as he takes you through the presentation. You can ask questions online as the session is being conducted, and we will respond to those at the end, time permitting. So before Jim takes over, let me just offer some context for this session. As I suspect you know, Gartner is now the largest provider of IT research and advisory services. And we deliver insight to help our clients make better decisions every day. And we serve our clients in a variety of ways, one of which is through a service that gives you direct access to over 650 research analysts, of which Jim is one. So during the course of the webinar, you'll hear reference to our most successful service, Gartner for IT Leaders. Gartner for IT Leaders provides a decision support service for leaders in 8 distinct roles in the IT organization, including applications, which is our focus today. So with that, I'll turn the meeting over to Managing Vice President Jim Holinchek. Jim, over to you. Jim, you may be on mute. I'm not hearing you.
You're right, Neil. I am on mute. Thank you for that very nice introduction. And as Neil indicated, we're here to talk about 5 real major discontinuities that we see impacting the landscape for ERP, supply chain management, and CRM solutions. And we're going to talk a little bit about how that affects how you think about selection, as well as managing the portfolio of applications that you have. And one of the things that we find is that enterprise applications, not terribly surprisingly, is an important priority for CIOs out there. And you could argue even the number one priority, business intelligence, has a lot to do with enterprise applications because a lot of the data that one uses to do business intelligence and information delivery comes from enterprise applications. And so even though they're not new technologies necessarily, they're still very important technologies. And the reason why they're very important technologies is that they have an important impact on the business. And so, again, if you look at the business priorities that CIOs have outlined, improving business processes, and attracting and retaining new customers are, the top two out there. And business applications, have a very prominent role to play in those business priorities. And so, again, not terribly surprising that it's an important technology priority. But what we do find is that, the business needs to be working well and working better in many cases with IT in terms of finding, selecting, managing their application portfolio in a way that is going to meet the requirements that the business has in terms of improving processes and, attracting and retaining customers and other business strategies and priorities. And what we find is that sometimes there is a gap in expectations between what the business wants and thinks they need and what the IT organization wants and thinks the business should do. And you know, it really does take a partnership, and the business must really drive the selections because they ultimately, at the end of the day, are going to be responsible for the end results of using those applications. I mean, they're going to be the ones that are responsible for the improvement in the business processes. They're going to be the ones that are responsible for attracting and retaining the customers. And so the challenge we find is that if there is a gap and the business doesn't feel like it's getting what it needs from the IT organization, that they'll look for alternatives. They'll look for alternative ways of meeting those needs. And different alternatives have started to emerge out there for customers to take advantage of. And in some cases, they're working with IT to investigate those alternatives. And in other cases, they may be moving off in their own directions, and IT has to come in at a later date and sort of work with what's been determined and or push back on what the business may have chosen because, for a variety of reasons it could happen. But it's, there is this, trend that we have been seeing of, the business where, where they do have gaps in terms of application capabilities, taking more responsibility for, filling those gaps. And so we're going to talk about that in the context of one or two of the different discontinuities during the rest of the call. So what are the discontinuities that we see really impacting the environment? We're going to talk about five today that are pretty important ones, starting with business processes and how companies' thinking around business processes have changed and what that means in terms of your applications environment. We're going to talk a little bit about technology, the impact of service-oriented architecture and business process management technologies. We're going to talk about software as a service as a delivery model. That is one of those alternatives that I talked about on the previous slide that organizations are investigating as a way to, augment their portfolio of applications, oftentimes led by the business. And we'll also talk about vendor consolidation. I think all of you on the call probably have seen your share of, impacts of vendor consolidation in terms of your vendor relationships and your application portfolio. And, we're going to talk about, how to think about that and, where, the direction may be going in that area. And then lastly, we're going to talk about what we've called in our research at Gartner Generation V, but the you'll hear other terms used for it, the millennials, the digital natives, and the impact that they're going to start to have in terms of how organizations think about their applications, selecting their applications, and as well as the line between the consumer grade software and business software. So as we think about business processes, again, not a new thought. Applications have been used to automate processes for many years, but even a focus on end-to-end processes have been around for quite a while. So looking at optimizing processes like, order to cash or procure to pay, those aren't necessarily new things, but what is new is trying to not only look at it from an end-to-end perspective, but also looking at it from a more interactive perspective and how you work with the various different constituencies and roles that are impacted throughout that process, and not only just the how the process operates, but also the agility of that process. That is, how easy is that process to change over time as the organization's needs change, either in terms of how it wants to go to market, how it wants to compete against the competition in a market. And, that's becoming an increasingly important role for applications, in particular to play, is to support this notion of process agility for processes that are more strategic. And I'm going to talk about that in a second in terms of the difference between strategic and more tactical processes. But this sort of shift in terms of the focus around processes, puts quite a bit of pressure on organizations in terms of the applications that they use to allow the flexibility to change and to innovate over time. And if you think about how applications historically have been built, what we've seen is that the notion of process has really been embedded in the applications. And so there's sort of an implicit process model that you can change and maneuver based on how you configure an application. So there's typically a bunch of tables that you have that allow you to set different switches that makes the application behave in a certain way that's going to support a certain process. But the process itself is really embedded in those configuration options. And what's starting to change with the model-driven approach to building applications is to make that process explicit from the implementation. So it's not embedded in the applications anymore. You're able to define and ultimately change that process explicitly external to the application, and then when the process gets executed, then it's basically invoking the appropriate implementation resources to make that happen. And I have to say, the applications as they exist today don't necessarily provide you with that flexibility to do that, but what's emerging from some of the next generation applications that are coming out from the major vendors is, sort of that more explicit delineation between, process and the implementation or execution of that process. And if you look at some of the design of things like, SAP's Business by Design solution, some of the design principles that Oracle's using as part of its Fusion Edition applications, you see this notion of this explicit process definition coming to the fore. And we're probably at the beginning of this particular cycle of evolution in terms of how it is utilized in terms of vendor applications. But directionally, this is something that we definitely see the market moving towards over time. And it's important to understand that, even though this is the direction that we see moving over time, over time means it's not all going to happen at once. And certain processes are going to probably take advantage of this, faster than other processes, may need to take advantage of it. And that's a key thing because, not all processes are created equal. There are processes that are definitely more strategic that differentiate a company in the market from its competitors that may provide the specific innovation that drives new revenue streams for an organization. And then there's the more tactical things, running payroll, for example. For most organizations, almost all organizations, running your payroll is about as tactical as it gets. And for the more tactical processes, it's not as much about agility as it is about standardization, trying to drive cost out of those processes. And so, as you can see on this graphic here, those more tactical processes really and more commoditized processes tend to fall more into integrated application suites. And over time, more and more things do get commoditized. What's today a leading edge practice tomorrow may be something that is much more of a common practice for organizations to do. And so the scope of what should be thought of in terms of an integrated suite of applications becomes greater over time. But what you do see is that you're never going to get everything that you need from a single vendor in an integrated application suite. And so, you know, you're going to end up doing things around the edges of that application suite. And some of those things may be things like open source. It may be software as a service solutions. Could be other best of breed applications. It could be some of those may be specific products or vendors that are part of an ecosystem that's being driven by one of the major vendors. It could be a composite application that's built with the tools provided by the vendor that extends capabilities or combines capabilities that may already exist in the integrated application suite. And so there's a lot of ways that organizations are looking at, you know, how, you know, drawing the right sort of line between what goes in that suite and what goes into other alternative ways to get capabilities. And I think that the key point here is that, you know, at any given point in time, it really is just a point-in-time look. And you need to regularly sort of reevaluate that portfolio of applications you have. You know, look at the sort of the state of the practices that are being automated in those products and determine, you know, where the right boundaries are for you. You know, what should be in that and, you know, what should be moved into or maybe even moved out of that integrated application suite. And where else do you need to add capabilities, you know, again, as your business needs change? And the other part of it is, you know, processes aren't necessarily an island unto themselves. You know, you really should think about processes in the context of an overall business architecture. And so it's not, you know, it's not just about, just the processes. It's about, you know, determining what your strategy is, how you're going to change those processes, how you're going to operate and manage those processes, and the implications that it has not only on the processes but the technologies themselves. And you know, as you think about, you know, all of these different elements of a business architecture, you see that, you know, there's a lot of different ways that you know, you might bring in, you know, capabilities to support those business processes. So you might look at, in addition to just applications to do it, you could look at things like business process outsourcing. You might centralize certain things, but have other things be more decentralized in the business units. You may be running your own operations, but you may be, and you may centralize them, but it may be an offshore operation, or it may be either captive offshore or, you know, outsourced offshore in terms of, you know, running and maintaining applications. You might have, as we talked about before, things like software as a service, you know, coming into play there as well. And so the landscape, if you will, that you have around not only your business processes, but your technology supporting those business processes, you know, is getting increasingly complex. And, you know, you really do have a spectrum of choices in terms of, you know, how you think about the technology to deliver the business processes, as well as, you know, how you want to operate those business processes in the first place. And, you know, for the things that are more strategic, you know, generally you're going to be looking at, from a process perspective, you know, wanting to own those and manage those in-house. But again, some of those things that are more tactical, you know, you are going to look at probably business process outsourcing and other ways to, like shared services, to help drive cost out of those processes. Which, you know, again, has implications in terms of the technology and technology support for it. And so as you're making decisions about, you know, how you move forward in managing your portfolio, you know, you need to understand, you know, what the role is for outsourcing and things like that, so that, you know, you can make appropriate choices in terms of, you know, how you're going to have the right underlying applications and technology to support those business processes. And I thought I'd, you know, move into talking about the second discontinuity. You know, so, you know, SaaS is one of the things that certainly has an impact in terms of how you're going to be sourcing technology to deliver on business processes. And, frankly, what we see is that, there's different levels of experience out there or different strategies that companies are using to think about their software as a service investments. And, for the most part, what we see today is companies, really looking at SaaS as a way to replace, specific departmental, on-premise applications. In some cases, they're departmental applications where IT may not have been as responsive to the needs of the business. In other cases, they may be, applications that are, so limited in usage that they're not something that's, on IT's radar screen, or there's some things that are, basically utilities that, IT, can live with, the users, going to, source some of these themselves. They're just not significant enough, again, to make it on the radar screen. There's very few out there that have, sort of gone the direction of saying, we're going to, proactively make software as a service, guiding principle in terms of how we think about, managing our application portfolio and think about, utilizing it throughout all of our application portfolio. And even fewer that have really said, we don't want to do anything on-premise anymore. We want to have as much delivered, off-premises, via software as a service, via hosted solutions, via business process outsourcing. There are very few that have gone that sort of direction. So as you're thinking about managing, your portfolio today, you have to sort of think about, where you want to be in terms of the type of organization. Are you more of a, a pragmatist and want to use it on a limited basis, or are you somebody who really wants to push more of the envelope and see, what the opportunities are for software as a service across a broader, across your broad portfolio of enterprise applications? The other thing that's happening is that in addition to, a proliferation of software as a service applications coming into the market, and if you look at the last several years in terms of business applications, what you see is that it's hard for any new vendor almost to get funding without being, a software as a service type of model. So, that's in terms of things that you're going to add on to your sort of mega vendor capabilities, it's, become sort of the de facto option almost in many cases. Although we have seen a little bit of a swing back in some cases with vendors who may have even started as SaaS, starting to reconsider options for deployment that would support on-premise. But the other thing, and probably more significant thing that's happening out there, is the whole sort of notion of, not just being niche providers out there, but having more of an application platform that they provide as a service that not only do the vendors themselves provide their applications on top of that platform, but they build ecosystems out of partner vendors that build on top of the same platform and can integrate to those applications, in the cloud. And, certainly Salesforce.com with its Force.com platform, vendors like Microsoft and some of the things that's announced recently with Azure, SAP and Oracle certainly, looking to do more to interoperate with the cloud, but and certainly building out ecosystems of partners that augment their applications as they move more of their stuff to, be in a hosted mode, software as a service, et cetera. You'll see, I think, sort of incremental capabilities that get deployed, more in a cloud sort of basis, from those vendors as well, and certainly their partners deploying it, in a cloud type of environment. as well as you'll see, you know, consumer applications or consumer-centric applications that start moving more into the business realm as well. You know, vendors like Zoho, for example, already have, you know, started to offer things like CRM applications and HR applications in addition to, you know, the online office suite type of market it started in. So it's going to be an interesting evolution. You just don't have the, you know, the niche applications out there that have sort of evolved over the last 5 to 6 years or longer in some cases. You know, you have the bigger players that are starting to, you know, try to find their way in terms of leveraging their market power and ability to try and build out ecosystems to impact it. And in terms of your making decisions about this, you know, a lot of it depends on sort of whose cloud you've sort of bet on to some extent, and how cloud interoperability works over time. And some of those things are still a little bit unclear, but those are some of the things that you're going to have to navigate as SaaS solutions evolve over time. And we expect that, especially as newer vendors come into the market over the next several years, it's going to be less and less common for them to build out their own infrastructure. Yeah, they're going to be looking at one of these platform types of solutions to, you know, provide sort of that foundation infrastructure for their solutions, and which they can build on top of. And, you know, that's going to present an interesting challenge for some of the existing software as a service providers, you know, whether or not the economics will favor them, you know, continuing to sort of support their own platform and infrastructure, or, you know, will the economics force them to start, you know, picking a, you know, specific, you know, platform as a service type of provider in which to run their applications on top of. And, you know, right now we haven't seen a big movement, at least in the HR market that I cover, where there is quite a number of SaaS applications out there. We haven't seen a big movement to these application platform as a service types of providers, but, you know, as we see some of the early vendors, you know, like Coda, which is owned by Agresso now, you know, their Coda2Go solution built on top of the Force.com platform, you know, applications like that, as we see sort of what happens in terms of, you know, market impact and success there, you know, if there is good success, you know, I think we'll see others, you know, starting to look at that similar type of opportunity. And so if you look at the complexities, you know, today, I think the thing to sort of recognize here is that, you know, the SaaS market is going to continue, you know, to change and evolve over time. And you look at, you know, SaaS as it exists today, you know, we have basic functionality and low cost here. You know, that's generally the case, though in some markets, you know, it can be higher end functionality and higher pricing too. You know, SaaS is getting a little bit more sophisticated, even in the departmental apps that it supports. You don't see broad, you know, ERP solutions beyond really the small to mid-sized enterprise today in terms of SaaS. It's, you know, really the purview primarily of those smaller organizations. Again, we're just seeing solutions come on the market now that have a broader ERP type of scope, you know, from vendors like Workday, for example, and that are targeted at more of the larger enterprise market. So it's a little bit early to say sort of, you know, how well that's going to play out. But clearly, you know, we will see, you know, more adoption starting to occur there. You know, we do see, you know, SaaS in that sense having, you know, some impact on the ERP backbone, if you will, so finance, HCM, procurement. Today it's been primarily around the edges, you know, again, more departmental apps. But as we look at the 2010 timeframe and beyond, you know, we do see that even for the backbone types of applications that, you know, customers are starting to consider software as a service there. So Workday and Human Capital Management. You know, I mentioned the Coda2Go solution in terms of, and that's more of a finance app. So some of these, you know, solutions that are targeted at, you know, a little bit larger, more complex organizations are starting to emerge out there, and we'll start to see, you know, some acquisition of those solutions. And it's already started to happen in some respects today, but more so certainly by 2010 and you know, potentially significantly more by the 2012 type of time frame. And if you look at what the mega vendors are doing, vendors like Oracle and SAP, they're hedging their bets to some extent. So, you know, as Oracle's designing their Fusion Edition applications and building those, yeah, they built them with a multi-tenant model in mind that could be deployed as software as a service. SAP, you know, does have Business by Design, that is a software as a service solution that, though targeted today at small to mid-sized businesses, may, you know, see, you know, some usage by somewhat larger organizations, you know, that can, you know, live with sort of the set of functionality that's being delivered there. So it's even the mega vendors are hedging their bets to some extent in terms of, you know, if that does, you know, become something much more common in terms of the ERP backbone, you know, they will have you know, a story to tell, if you will, around it. And you know, in 2012, you know, I think, you know, I talked about sort of the shift that's happening with some of the, you know, platforms that are emerging. You know, you're probably not going to see a wholesale shift of every SaaS vendor, you know, to one of these, you know, cloud-based application platform as a service offerings, you know, in a very, you know, short time period. It's going to take time to evolve. And again, you know, one will have to look and see, you know, how the early efforts fare to see, you know, how fast that shift may happen. But the 2012 timeframe, certainly we expect to see quite a bit of SaaS offerings, especially, you know, new ones introduced between now and then, to leverage more of that type of capability. So the third discontinuity, SOA and business process management, service-oriented architecture and business process management. You know, it's starting to change how software is built as well as how customers have an opportunity to buy it and consume it. You know, if you look at, you know, how things used to be built, you know, you used to have applications be built as, you know, different business functions that would be integrated together, where it was very difficult to, you know, take out one business function and make changes to it without impacting a whole bunch of other business functions. And it made, you know, challenges in terms of customization, in terms of upgrading the applications. And, you know, service-oriented architecture in conjunction with business process management, you know, has a promise of changing some of those dynamics. So, you know, by building things as more discrete services that can be, you know, compiled together at runtime, it provides more flexibility to sort of isolate changes that get made to the applications. Likewise, you know, custom things that are built can interoperate more easily with the existing applications because they are, you know, also, you know, somewhat isolated, you know, from, you know, the package services that may be delivered. And so, it makes it easier to, you know, change and utilize those over time. And the business process management layer on top of this, you know, gives, you know, again, as we talked about earlier, by externalizing sort of the process itself from the applications, it provides an opportunity for you to have more flexibility to change those services out over time, be it packaged or custom-built services. And so as you're, you know, changing how you want to do processes, you know, that gives you a lot more flexibility and agility, potentially, to do that. And so, you know, it's a pretty important change that's happening right now. The impact from an applications perspective is that, you know, like most changes, it's not something that happens necessarily quickly or can be, you know, fully utilized across a large integrated suite of applications totally quickly. And if you look at sort of the state of things today, in terms of how vendors are leveraging service-oriented architecture today, what you do see is primarily more of a coexistence type of strategy. So service-enabling existing business application functionality, creating some common services that are in a formal services repository that can be leveraged by both the packages as well as custom processes, as organizations look at building composite applications to enhance what's delivered in terms of the the core packages that they've bought, and having a service-oriented architected backplane that allows the interoperability between all of those things, and leveraging BPM, especially to support those composite applications, and I'll talk more about that in a minute. What we expect over time, though, is that we'll see more extensive service-oriented architecting of the packages, and instead of just extensions to the applications and some interfaces to the existing applications, true service enablement of those packages, either to some extent in existing applications, but most likely in some of the next generation packages that are being produced by some of the vendors out there, and especially some of the major vendors out there. I think, at this point, what you should be doing is, looking at SOA and business process management as an opportunity to focus on processes where you do need that agility. So, again, focusing on the more strategic processes and leveraging the flexibility that SOA can provide and the interoperability through the backplane to really give you the most flexibility possible for those strategic processes. Again, for the things that are more commodity and tactical, you shouldn't spend too much time really thinking about SOA, with the exception of really leveraging it more in terms of improving your ability to integrate with those capabilities, not so much in terms of supporting process agility. And as I mentioned earlier, a business process management solution is very important in terms of creating composite applications. And, it is, the best environment to do that, what Gartner has called a business process platform. And it really is because it does have that external definition of the business process, and with the business process management suite tools, has a process orchestration layer that can do the execution of those business processes, and where appropriate, invoke the services, custom built service oriented business applications, be it packaged applications that have a service enabled APIs, or even third party services, depending on what the process is that you may need to invoke as part of it. But giving that external definition of the process, and as well as the external orchestration of that process, gives you the kind of agility that you'd be looking for a strategic process that you would want to take advantage of the composition environment to drive out there. And so we see this as in the short term, the way that organizations are going to get the best leverage of service-oriented architecture and business process management together. However, as you're thinking about this, there are some things to make sure you do think through. The big vendors are going to push their platforms to do this, in terms of all the different layers we talked about. So the business process definition, business process orchestration, the compositing environment, they're going to want you to use their platforms because they can best leverage their existing applications and their services that they've chosen to expose. And the thing you need to focus on is what are you trying to do, and what role do those big vendors have in that usage scenario? So you know, if it's an order to cash process that you're really trying to optimize because that's really strategic to your business, you know, you have to look at sort of, you know, how big a role does your existing, you know, ERP vendor have, for example, in that particular process. And where do you need the agility to be? You know, is it on, you know, the, you know, accounts receivable cash collection side of it, or is it really more on the front end in terms of, you know, how you do order management and, you know, and actually collect the order? And so, you know, depending on your usage scenario, you may, you know, it may be a good idea to leverage the platform, or it may be a good idea to leverage, you know, different you know, types of platforms to do that work. And we've got quite a bit of MQ analysis coming out that talks about, you know, the different elements of the platform and what different vendors are providing there. So you should definitely take a look at that. You know, there obviously the big vendors are also going to push, you know, their business process platform offerings as well. You know, and they're going to, you know, tell you that, you know, they're going to be the best way to, you know, be able to incrementally take on, you know, some of these emerging technologies. You know, they'll take, you know, if you trust them, they'll take you to that. And to some extent, that can be true, but you do want to see some of the work that we've published on process agility, on business process platforms, about the impact of model-driven technologies, as well as process integrity, which is not necessarily listed here on the slide, because I think that's really going to help you understand sort of what boundaries you can really push in terms of you know, utilizing the big application suite vendors as your business process platform provider. I think for most organizations, you know, it's you have to think about, you know, how much lock-in do you really want to have there, and, you know, what would be the, you know, the benefits of that versus having more control over over your own destiny there. And the last caution in terms of thinking about this is that if you think about sort of having that explicit process and the process being executed or orchestrated sort of independent of the applications and services underneath, you know, it puts more of a premium, obviously, on the processes themselves and the designs there, et cetera. And so a lot of the smaller vendors and you know, especially consultants and systems integrators are, you know, coming to the market with process templates that they've created. And, you know, you have to look at sort of how much leverage can you get from those process templates, you know, what's required to change those processes over time, and in terms of, you know, the business process management tools that you might use with those process templates. And, again, you should check out some of the research that we've published on process templates and, you know, where they're best used and where they're maybe not as good a fit.
Okay.
Having a little bit of trouble advancing the slide. Doesn't seem to want to advance. Neil, can you, I know you can advance the slide, thank you. Not sure why it's stuck, but it's stuck. Fourth discontinuity, vendor consolidation. Again, probably not big news to everybody out there who's on the call today. You know, there's been quite a bit of consolidation over time. You can see some of the vendors that have been involved in that consolidation. You know, it in one sense simplifies things because it, you know, does make it a smaller landscape of vendors to look at. On the other hand, it does provide more complexity because you don't know, you know, tomorrow if the vendor that you're using today, especially if it's a smaller niche vendor, you know, is necessarily going to be around. And so, you know, the best you can do is make sure that you do have the appropriate, you know, sort of contractual protections to make sure that, you know, if you are investing in, you know, some of the smaller niche vendors out there, that, you know, you have your options, you know, open to you in terms of, you know, how to proceed forward if an acquisition does happen. Okay. Looks like I'm back in control again, Neil, so thank you. The other thing is that, you know, what's happened, you know, through a lot of these acquisitions is that, you know, the market has moved to more of the mega vendors and mega suite providers out there in terms of applications. And, you know, what you've had over time is really, you know, sort of a bifurcation around, you know, a lot of big players and then a lot of smaller niche vendors that work around the edges. You know, there's a shrinking crowd that's somewhere in the middle that's trying to sort of compete head-to-head against the mega vendors in certain areas, but, you know, and still providing a broader suite of enterprise applications. And, you know, it's a tough, market for them to necessarily compete in. They're, you know, not as big and, you know, have the resources of the mega vendors, but yet they don't have necessarily the depth of, you know, functionality and capability that, you know, a smaller niche vendor has in its little area. And so, you know, those are the ones that you sort of need to keep an eye on out there as you're looking at making your application investments. And, you know, but again, as I mentioned earlier, the thing you need to keep in mind with the enterprise, you know, vendors is that, you know, they're not going to be able to provide everything that you need. You know, they provide a lot of functionality, but, you know, there's going to be, you know, applications that you need that may be industry specific, that may be, you know, specific to a type of job that you have in the organization, maybe for a specific type of project that you're trying to do that, you know, may never come from your, you know, ERP or mega vendor. And so it's important to understand from a holistic perspective, you know, what, you know, the role of the mega vendor is in your organization if you are using one. And then, again, you know, understanding about how you're going to look to source those extended applications. And, you know, you want to understand where you're going to put that fence around your ERP vendor, you know, and where you want to focus your usage there, and where do you need to be looking for other things, either, you know, custom development, composite development, you know, niche best of breed vendors, you know, possibly delivered through software as a service. You know, you need to look at all of those types of things in terms of, you know, completing the full application portfolio. And I'm going to move on to the last discontinuity, Generation V, the digital natives. You know, there's a lot of things we could talk about with the people who are entering the workforce today. You know, they've grown up on technology. They're very comfortable using it. They do a lot of peer-to-peer interaction through things like social networking sites. And, you know, that is going to – they're going to have certain expectations as they move into the workforce as to, you know, what capabilities businesses are going to provide in terms of their applications, you know, how much control they're going to have, you know, you know, in terms of which applications they use, in terms of the user experience around those applications. And, you know, they're going to be coming to IT looking for, you know, their business, you know, the businesses they're coming into to provide, you know, the same sort of flexibility that they see at the consumer level. And if you don't think that's going to happen, you know, we've done some very interesting research talking to both end users at companies as well as IT professionals. And what the research showed is that, you know, consumer-grade software is already being used in the workplace today. The interesting thing to note is that if you look at the answers from the end users as well as the IT professionals about their estimates of other users in the organization in terms of their use of consumer-grade software, you see the answers are pretty close for the most part, except for the large enterprise companies. You see a bit of a divergence there between the two groups. But if you ask them individually, the end users, what they themselves are doing in terms of usage of consumer-grade software, it's considerably higher. And I think the implication there is that, you know, there isn't going to be a way to necessarily control, you know, how the end users are going to get the tools and capabilities they need to get their job done. You know, and you need to have a strategy that embraces some of that, as well as looks for opportunities to provide corporate solutions where necessary that, you know, provides similar capabilities that augment what you're trying to do with your enterprise applications today. And so, you know, it may be things that you do with portals, it may be things that, you know, social networking tools that come from, you know, enterprise application vendors over time. You know, there may be different strategies for doing it depending on sort of what you're trying to accomplish. But I think the point really is that, you know, there's going to be, you know, higher demands on IT for either allowing the usage of these types of tools to augment the work experience or to, you know, provide comparable tools in the environment to support user needs. And, you know, there's a lot of hype going on out there about some of the things like social platforms in the enterprise and, you know, having, you know, things like a corporate Facebook. And, you know, to some extent, I think organizations are still feeling their way through sort of the best way to leverage these types of platforms. But if you think about, you know, again, business processes and, you know, the work that gets done in enterprise applications, it is largely, you know, more structured formal processes that are automated in those solutions. But there's a whole lot of work that's more ad hoc, that, you know, where the interactions are more ad hoc between people, that some of these social platforms, I think, can do a better job of potentially supporting. And, you know, the question really becomes more about sort of the use cases that you have around social software that, you know, I think is really going to, you know, help drive, you know, adoption. And, you know, the example here on this slide for a large consulting firm, you know, there are a lot of different processes in terms of, you know, their customer relationship management, in terms of how they, you know, work together in terms of, you know, collaborating on projects, et cetera. You can find a lot of good use cases for social software to really augment, you know, existing, you know, more formal business processes they have. In other types of organizations, you know, the examples may not be as obvious, but, you know, what you should be doing is targeting, you know, targeting those processes where, you know, providing this kind of platform and software, you know, is going to augment and provide more value to those processes. And, you know, will work in a way that sort of supports the natural, you know, interaction dynamics that that group has. So it's not something that's, you know, replacing, again, that sort of ad hoc interaction that they're used to having, but, again, provides more of an augmentation to it over time. So to wrap up, you know, as you're thinking about, you know, making, you know, decisions about, you know, the business case around, you know, and the value you're trying to get from your business applications, as you're making decisions about your application portfolio, and as you're making, you know, evaluations of vendor capabilities, you want to keep in mind all five of these discontinuities. And, you know, this is sort of an example chart that you might put together in terms of doing that kind of evaluation. And so, you know, these are a few characteristics around each of the discontinuities that you may take a look at in those dimensions. But the key is that, you know, you need to sort of define, you know, what those capabilities are in your environment, because they're going to be different from company to company a little bit. And, you know, create a similar matrix as you're, you know, working your way through, you know, your application strategy and managing your application portfolio over time. So I'm going to close with a few recommendations. You know, for those folks that are more business leaders that are on the call today, you know, you want to make sure that you think about these discontinuities as you're thinking about what your business processes are going to evolve into in the future. You know, looking at, you know, defining new capabilities where these discontinuities actually may be, you know, of a benefit to you to, you know, be able to more quickly adopt those new capabilities. You know, make sure that you are communicating with the IT folks about the application strategy. And, again, making sure that you're articulating, you know, what's really tactical versus what's really strategic and going to differentiate your business. And, you know, don't do it just as a one-time activity. Make sure that you do have regular interactions between the business and IT to make sure that, you know, you're updating these scenarios over time, and that because the business environment's not static, and again, the application environment isn't static either. You know, some of the vendors, especially that offer, you know, software as a service solutions, are updating their products, you know, quarterly, in some cases even monthly, with new functionality and new capabilities. So the line is definitely moving all the time between sort of the strategic and the tactical. For the IT folks, you know, make sure that you have you know, a current assessment, you know, based on that example that I showed before, in terms of your sourcing. You know, defining scenarios with the business that connects these discontinuities to business strategy. I mean, the business folks need to drive it, but you know, you can provide some help in terms of, you know, providing some of those examples where you might be able to apply the technology to improve the processes and better execute on the business strategy. And, you know, obviously, you know, working with the business users to assess risk and determine opportunities, you know, especially if there's, you know, relatively big movement into the consumer software side, you know, some of it, you know, may be not, you know, prudent for the organization to do. And so, you know, it's okay to push back and make sure that, you know, if some of that consumer-grade software is being used, that, you know, that the risk is assessed and mitigated appropriately, or, you know, in some cases even, you know, not allowing that to be used, you know, if the risk is too high. And so, you know, obviously there's some near-term strategic decisions that you can make in terms of how you manage and balance that portfolio. And, you know, you have to sort of, again, understand where that line is and where that fence is that you might put around that, you know, integrated, you know, ERP type of solution, you know, balancing the cost of integration, you know, versus, you know, some of the technology opportunities that are coming through SOA and BPM versus, you know, being able to do or being able to leverage niche solutions and, you know, doing your own sort of custom and composite application development. So with that, I will turn it over to Neil.
Jim, thanks very much. And let me just finish up with two key points. The first one is that the tools and the capabilities and the research and the insight that you've heard some of in today's call is available to our clients through a service which we call Gartner for IT leaders in the application space. And Jim is one of the team who work on this service. Gartner for IT Leaders now has over 10,000 clients worldwide. This is a very popular service, and if this is something that you'd like to pursue, then please talk to your Gartner associate about Gartner for IT Leaders. And then secondly, there is a lot of interest at the moment in the whole area of the economy around cost-cutting. Jim, would you mind just advancing the slide one more this time around? It's me that can't advance, so maybe you can. So there's a lot of interest in how Gartner can help clients reduce their costs. And the slide that we're hoping to put up in just a moment will show you four ways that Gartner can help clients reduce their costs and do so very quickly, to the extent to which a lot of our clients are now regarding Gartner as something of a self-funding investment, which pays back very quickly over time. And it looks like that slide is coming up now. I won't dwell on this right now, but there are, the four areas are: we can help you get better pricing and terms for your IT purchases. We can help you identify major cost-saving opportunities. We can help you implement cost-saving technologies. And lastly, we can help you with cost-saving in terms of business processes. So finally, last slide, if you would like more information, please speak to the Gartner associate who invited you to this webinar. If you need more help with who that is, then in front of you is the email address, gartnerwebinars@gartner.com. And likewise, if you'd like a copy of today's presentation, please email us at that address. So thank you very much for your time. I think we are over time, and I see there are no questions online. So with that, I'm going to close this call and thank you for your participation. So operator, we've now closed the call. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. At this time, you may now disconnect. This does conclude today's conference call.